Good afternoon. It's Monday, the 19th of March, 2018, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Mike Robinson. Joining me in the studio today, Patrick Henningsen from 21st Century Wire. Welcome to the programme, Patrick.
Great to be with you, Mike.
Right, we're going to get straight on with the continuing saga of Sergei Skripal and the responses to that. Over the weekend, the Foreign and Commonwealth Office issued a statement on the reprisals from Russia, if you want to call them that. Our ambassador in Moscow has just been informed by the Russian government that they will expel 23 diplomats, close the British Consulate General in St. Petersburg, and close the British Consul in Moscow. In light of Russia's previous behaviour, we anticipated a response of this kind, and the National Security Council will meet early next week to consider next steps. So that'll be early this week that they meet. It is Russia that is in flagrant breach of international law and the Chemical Weapons Convention, mm-hmm. Patrick. So we'll come on to a little bit more of that in a second. Now, yesterday, Andrew Marr on the BBC had the Russian ambassador to the EU, Vladimir Chizhov, on the programme. He was saying that, well, Portendown, as we all know, is the largest military facility in the United Kingdom. It's been dealing with chemical weapons research, and it's actually only 8 miles away from Salisbury. Other people have made that point as well. Of course, Andrew Marr was pretty shocked, isn't really the right word. He was feigning disbelief at a suggestion that Portendown might be involved. He said, are you suggesting that Portendown was involved in this? And Mr. Chizhov said, I don't know. I don't have any evidence that anything has been used. And of course, that's the point here, Patrick, isn't it? We still don't have any definitive evidence of what has been used, if anything has been used of the type that's being described by the UK government. So we go on. But Boris Johnson then, that interview was followed up with an interview with Boris Johnson. And I just wanted to draw people's attention to a couple of points that Boris made. So let's listen to the first one here.
And I might just say in response to Mr. Chizhov's point about Russian stockpiles of chemical weapons, we actually have evidence within the last 10 years that Russia has not only been investigating the delivery of nerve agents for the purposes of assassination, but has also been creating and stockpiling Novichok.
So the Russians now have been creating and stockpiling Novichok for 10 years. Now, this is something, Patrick, that it's a class of chemical weapons that the UK government has never mentioned before.
No.
Publicly. And suddenly we're saying that Russia has stockpiles and has been stockpiling them for years.
Yeah, the only time I've actually seen it mentioned, Mike, was on a TV program. I think it was called First Strike. And this was broadcast in the United States in November 2017 and in the UK in February 2018. So that's the first the public has ever heard of Novichok in a fictional sense. Our guest, who we'll introduce shortly, pointed out that it's almost as if the government in the UK has plagiarized this television program to come up with the plot of this latest saga.
The Russian ambassador to the EU made this statement about Portendown, and Boris Johnson was asked to comment on that as well, so let's just have a quick listen to that.
So that was a direct lie that I was being given there.
But you will get that, and
I'm just going to play that again, because he doesn't answer. He's asked a specific question, that was a lie, and he doesn't answer.
So that was a direct lie that I was being given there.
But you will get that, and
you will get that. Now is a good chance to bring in our guest for today, Dmitry Orlov, author and political analyst. Welcome to the program, Dmitry. You're in St. Petersburg at the moment. What's the Russian public's view of what's being presented in the UK, and or at least is coming across from the UK government and also the UK media at the moment?
Well, this is getting very extensive coverage in Russia. There's a lot of detail being introduced, and it is making the British government, the British authorities, and the news media in the West look idiotic, retarded, for all Russians to see. The Russians see that there is absolutely no truthful information leaking out, probably because it doesn't exist, probably because the story is absolutely hollow. We don't know that anything at all happened to these two people. They could be alive and well, or they could be dead somewhere in a landfill, which we will just never know. The easiest way to prevent leaks of actual information in a case like this is if there is no case, and that could very well be what is happening.
The Russian ambassador didn't go as far as to actually suggest that Porton Down was involved in this, but he did make a reasonable point, which we have made on this program last week. It's not a point which is being made in the mainstream media, but is this an angle which is being recognized within the Russian media?
Well, the British government is on record saying that Porton Down was instrumental in identifying that the nerve agent used was, in fact, Novichok. And if that is accepted at face value, then this means several things. First, Porton Down is involved. Second, Porton Down has a sample of Novichok. Third, if they have a sample, they probably didn't get it from Russia. They must have made it themselves or from the Americans via Kyrgyzstan, where it was supposedly manufactured to begin with. So once we start accepting that Porton Down was involved, there's basically a chain of other facts that we have to introduce and either prove or disprove, based, of course, on no information whatsoever.
Well, indeed. Now, let's just mention Porton Down here today, because the OPCW is visiting Porton Down today, Patrick. This is apparently to try to give some independent verification of what the UK government has said. So they're saying that investigators from Chemical Weapons Watchdog OPCW to arrive in the UK following the incident in Salisbury. They're saying that the team from The Hague will meet with officials from the Defence Science and Technology Laboratory and the police to discuss the process for collecting samples, including environmental ones. The samples that they collect will then be dispatched to what they're describing, or at least what the Foreign Office is describing, as highly reputable international laboratories selected by the OPCW for testing, with results expected to take a minimum of 2 weeks. And this is the next step in the process of independently verifying the analysis carried out by Porton Down, and follows a letter that Theresa May wrote last Wednesday to the OPCW to formally invite them to verify the government's analysis. So this apparently, the government claims, keeps them within the terms of the various chemical weapons agreements. One of our researchers, viewers, Patrick, made this point, or highlighted this gentleman. This is Chris Timberley, who works at Porton Down. He is the capability leader for chemistry at the Defence Science and Technology Laboratory at Porton Down. He's worked there for 20 years. He specialises as a defence analyst for chemical warfare agents, and so on. And he's written this book, Best Synthetic Methods, all about the chemistry of organophosphates. He's a specialist in organophosphates, but it turns out he is also the chairman of the Scientific Advisory Board for the OPCW. Now, I appreciate that, you know, there are lots of people on the Scientific Advisory Board for the OPCW. One of the things that struck me, however, about this list is that most of the countries that provide specialists for the OPCW, those specialists are working in academia. The UK is one of only a few countries on that list where the specialist provided is actually employed directly by the government in a chemical weapons research facility. So I find that quite interesting. It does perhaps ask some or cause some questions to be raised about who exactly is being sent over by the OPCW to Porton Down and what the relationships are there. Now, I asked the OPCW to tell me who was coming to visit today, and they refused to do that. They said that they won't comment on operational matters. They simply said that in this case specifically, they will not be offering any comment. Dmitry, what are your thoughts on the OPCW involvement in this? It seems to be happening all quite late, and surely it would have been, if there was anything there, this should have been brought. They should have been brought in right at the very beginning. It's sort of it's reminiscent of the situation in Syria, where the OPCW isn't getting the opportunity to be on the ground to actually at the time the event takes place. They're invited to come and investigate at some period after the alleged chemical weapons use.
Well, again, the combination of setting your hair on fire over you know, the first chemical weapons attack in Europe since World War II, or you know, lobbing accusations in Russia at Russia left and right, and then bureaucratic foot dragging when it comes to fulfilling their obligations under international treaties, you know, that is a very worrying combination. It doesn't seem like they want to produce the right result at all. It seems like they want to produce the right political outcome for themselves. But as far as the actual details of the case, that is almost an afterthought at this point.
Yes.
And also, I just want to point out, Mike, that we had one OPCW official, I believe, has said recently that, you know, they would require 14 days to properly test and analyze any said nerve agent compound. So that begs the question, Mike, how would Theresa May, or much less Boris Johnson or anyone else, be able to declare that it was, in fact, Novichok, whatever this class of substance is, this obscure working title of a type of nerve agent, how would they know when, leading chemical weapons labs in the world, even regulators, would need at least 2 weeks? So that's the first thing. The second thing is Craig Murray recently disclosed an interesting bit of information that the OPCW did, in fact, do a controlled test with the scientific community in Iran, and they did manage to synthesize something similar to Novichok. And this was done in a controlled environment, and this was then presented to the OPCW, and that's, I believe, was in 2016. So what that proves is the mission there was to see if this could be synthesized through commercial materials, and certainly it can. So again, the initial claim by the British government that only Russia could have produced this, and not to mention this formula is apparently publicly available in a book that is only $30 or $4.99 on Kindle if you're tight for money. So again, it's just another claim that's been initially made out of the gates by the British government that quite frankly is not actually true. So we, as the public or as the press, have a duty to kind of ask these questions, even if the mainstream press aren't asking those questions.
Well, the Foreign Affairs Council meeting is taking place this morning. Boris Johnson was at that as well, and he was telling us on the doorstep interview that he was encouraged by the international support that Britain has received to date. Now, of course, Theresa May has been spending a lot of her time on the phone, telephoning just about every government leader, world leader that she can possibly get to grips with, get a contact with. He said that more than 20 countries across six continents have expressed their solidarity with the United Kingdom and will continue to work with our European partners and allies around the world to tackle the threat. So the question is, what has the European Union done about this? By the way, the quote on screen there, Russia has been concealing the needle of truth in a haystack of lies. The hypocrisy in this is just unbelievable. It gets harder to describe as time goes on.
Well, obviously, you can invert that statement by Boris Johnson, and he would actually be describing his own behavior and claims as well as those of his own government. It is beyond irony.
I guess he was looking in the mirror at the time. Anyway, what did the European Union do? Well, they released a statement today from the Foreign Affairs Council on the Salisbury attack. They said that the European Union strongly condemns the attack that took place. The lives of many citizens were threatened. So they're just regurgitating the British line on this. They said they're shocked by the offensive use of military-grade nerve agent of a type developed by Russia for the first time on European soil in over 70 years. The use of chemical weapons by anyone under any circumstances is completely unacceptable. And they talk about the OPCW and so on. They expressed an unqualified solidarity with the UK and its support, including for the UK efforts to bring those responsible for this crime to justice. And so what they then followed up with was they added four people to the list of targeted of those targeted by EU restrictive measures against the Syrian regime. They added these four people for their role in the development and use of chemical weapons against a civilian population in line with the EU's policy to fight the proliferation and use of chemical weapons. These people, unnamed people, but they included, they did say that they included a high-ranking military official, three scientists working at the Scientific Studies and Research Centre in Russia, the government entity responsible, they say, for developing and producing non-conventional weapons, including chemical weapons and the missiles to deliver them. Dmitry, do you think that Russia is going to be concerned by this latest imposition of sanctions by the European Union?
Well, no. In Russia now, it's a badge of honor to be sanctioned by the West. If you don't get sanctioned, then there's something suspicious about you. It's sort of like if you're really patriotic, above board, straight talking, straight shooting Russian, then you belong on a Western sanctions list. The people who don't get sanctioned are some kind of like traitors, weasels at this point. So I think that those scientists will get a little bit of, airtime and can act all dignified because now they're in that elite club of people who get sanctioned by the West. Yeah.
I want to point out something else, Mike, that the initial statements by Theresa May when she gave an ultimatum to the Russian government to explain themselves, to explain the appearance of Novichok, and they gave a 24-hour ultimatum. Of course, one would ask, Mike, why would you require an explanation from Russia if you, in fact, had the evidence, the incriminated evidence? But putting that to the side, this is an open-ended framework. So Theresa May said, this has either been done by the Russians or they have lost control of this substance. And this is the same talking point that was applied to Syria and the government of Bashar al-Assad, that in the red line framework. In other words, if you didn't do it, even if someone else did it, it's your fault because you managed to lose control of your weapons of mass destruction. So this is an arbitrary, open-ended framework that's been constructed by the British government. Go ahead, Dmitry.
I wouldn't call it a framework. It's basically a combination of faulty logic and lies. Novichok, if it in fact exists, it's not on the OPCW list. It hasn't been actually certified to exist. In any case, it would not have been developed by Russia. It would have been developed by the USSR. It was never on Russian territory because the facility where it was supposedly developed is in a different country that doesn't border Russia, that was part of the Soviet Union. That facility has been dismantled by the Americans and has been certified that there are no more weapons there. Russia has been certified as having destroyed its entire chemical weapons stockpile. They're regarded as militarily useless by countries around the world. Not only are they bound by treaty obligations to not develop them, not use them, but there's no reason to because they don't really work very well. There are other ways to achieve military objectives. So the whole thing just makes absolutely no sense. None whatsoever.
Dmitry, this is an interesting point because the Foreign Office this morning, when they were releasing their statement over the weekend, said that Russia is the official successor state to the USSR. As such, Russia legally took responsible for ensuring the CWC applies to all former Soviet chemical weapons stocks and facilities. And this just seemed like a completely irrational position to me when most of the ex-USSR nations had either become independent nation states,
republics.
Yeah. And so that Russia had no possibility of if Novichok was being developed in a chemical weapons facility in Uzbekistan, there was no possibility of Russia taking responsibility for it and taking control of it.
Go ahead.
This is the most preposterous thing you can imagine. The only thing Russia took over from the Soviet Union was the Soviet Union's foreign debt, which Russia has single-handedly paid off. As far as making sure that there are no chemical weapons on any of the former Soviet socialist republics, suppose a report surfaced that there were some chemical weapons on the territory of Estonia, which is a NATO country. What is Russia supposed to do? Invade Estonia and trigger a world war? This is just the most nonsensical thing you can imagine. It just shows how these brains are misfiring in all cylinders.
Yes,
and Dmitry is correct. And also the Convention for Chemical Weapons, an international treaty, effectively an international agreement, and also the OPCW, an international regulator. Russia has worked within all of these organizations together with the UK. What has happened, Mike, in the last 2 weeks is Britain has broken off its engagement in those bilateral or multilateral agreements by its own actions, by its own statements, by pointing the finger of guilt, claiming its Russian origin, when there is no way to determine whether it's Russian origin or not. And most likely it's not. In fact, the evidence points to other conclusions. So, just before we move on, Dmitry, I wanted to also ask you, you wrote penned a very good essay recently on killing diplomacy. And you really pointed out one of the real fundamental problems and dangers here is Theresa May, Boris Johnson, and the American contingent as well. This lack of diplomacy, not lack of diplomacy, but actually undermining diplomacy in this instance, it's become really obvious and accentuated. It is dangerous. Can you just talk about that for a minute?
Yes, well, there's a very dangerous tendency that's been in place for a long time, both in the UK and in the US, to basically exploit foreign relations for the sake of domestic politics. So a good example of Thatcher declaring war against Argentina because her poll ratings reached zero and she had to do something dramatic. Another example is the whole nonsense about Russian electioning in the U.S., basically ruining relations with Russia for the sake of scoring some political points back home. And this latest fracas with Theresa May blaming the Russians for supposed use of chemical weapons based on zero evidence is another example of her trying to salvage her political career at the expense of foreign relations with another nuclear, very large, very important country. And this just shows that, you know, they're amateurs at the wheel. These people are dangerous at any speed. They have to be sidelined. You know, people in Britain have to do something to knock these people out of politics altogether. It's their lives that are in danger.
I have to say I couldn't agree more. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Dmitry. Thank you very much for joining us. We're going to move on now. If anybody wants to read more of your work, I know you've had a couple of articles on 21st Century Wire. Dmitry, where do people find you?
Go to cluborlov.blogspot.com, cluborlov.blogspot.com. I publish there every Tuesday.
Great.
Brilliant.
Thank you very much, Dmitry.
Thank you. Okay, Patrick, we're going to move on to this. Salisbury poison exposure leaves almost 40 needing treatment. This is last week in the Times. Major headline, major story, 40 people needing treatment. Except it wasn't quite like that, was it? Because over the weekend, and thanks to our member for UK Call member for pointing this out to me, this appeared in the Times. Let's blow it up a little bit so people can read it. Sir, further to your report, poison exposure leaves almost 40 needing treatment March 14th. May I clarify that no patients have experienced symptoms of nerve agent poisoning in Salisbury, and there have only ever been 3 patients with significant poisoning. Several people have attended the emergency department concerned that they may have been exposed. None has had symptoms of poisoning and none has needed treatment. Any blood tests performed have shown no abnormality. no member of the public has been contaminated by the agent involved, and that's from Stephen Davies, consultant in emergency medicine, Salisbury NHS Foundation Trust. And my point here is, Patrick, that the original article got this massive headline, this massive exposure in the Times website, on the in the Times newspaper, but the rebuttal comment got a couple, you know, a small section hidden within the letters page. They didn't follow up on this and create a new article saying, "Oh, sorry guys, we made a mistake."
Wow, that happens quite a lot, doesn't it, Mike? So what is this? What are we looking at here?
Well, we are, in fact, looking at fake news.
Fake news.
Absolutely fake news. So perhaps this is a good time. Sorry.
Well, I just want to say something to camera, actually.
Yes.
So Rupert Murdoch, you're fake news. Move on.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's remind ourselves, Media on Trial event taking place on March 27th in Leeds. You're going to be speaking at that. And several others. It's going to be an interesting day because the question is being asked, is the mainstream media in breach of the Terrorism Act in the UK because of being embedded with terrorists in the Middle East, because of putting out terrorist propaganda without any kind of questioning of it over the last couple of years, and perhaps not in breach of the Terrorism Act for the likes of that last headline, but they definitely should be on trial nonetheless.
Absolutely, yeah, and material support, giving political cover to internationally recognized extremist terrorist groups. I do think there's a lot of questions to be answered there.
So more details on mediaontrial.uk. Now, Patrick, 2001, and here's The Guardian, Iraq behind US anthrax outbreaks.
Well, look, with the Skripal Russian spy poisoning hysteria right now, which has taken hold of the UK, Europe, and beyond, I think it's important to go back in history and let's look at a very similar affair, an alleged biological or chemical weapons attack which took place on US soil. And this is The Guardian, but this could have easily been, Mike, the New York Times, the Washington Post at the time, Fox News, CBS, ABC, CNN, etc. They all blamed Iraq for these anthrax attacks. So just like that Times article we just showed, Mike, the headline goes out, it gets public traction, it goes viral, it penetrates the minds of the public. That propaganda effectively brainwashes the public into the first idea that comes into their mind, which was supplied by the government and the mainstream media, fake intelligence by the government, fed to the intellectually challenged members of the mainstream media, and they print that, and that is what goes into the minds of the public to scare the public to further whatever agenda. That's fake news as well, okay? And so I think we need to look back at these examples in history in order to understand what we're looking at today. It's very important.
But it turned out that, in fact, this was not anything to do with Iraq at all. And in fact, that that anthrax had come from a U.S. Laboratory.
Very similar to Porton Down, Mike.
And unfortunately, The Guardian then, okay, this is 7 years later, this is 2008, I believe, The Guardian then had to report that Bruce Ivins, the scientist who was set for prosecution in the U.S. anthrax attacks, had committed suicide. But, you know, this was a major fail for the mainstream media at the time.
Well, Fort Detrick military lab develops military-grade biological and chemical weapons research, and in fact even develops these substances at those. So Bruce Ivins, unfortunately, committed suicide. Sorry, I almost said suicided, almost a slip there. In the eve before he was supposed to go to court, and so the prosecution couldn't hear what he had to say, but it's important to also note there's two main chemical and biological research facilities in the United States, one, two of the leading ones, one being on the military side, Fort Detrick, and you have Plum Island as well. Mm. And there's an interesting connection between Plum Island and the foot and mouth crisis in the UK, and that was covered in Slaughtered on Suspicion documentary film, which hopefully will be re-releasing soon. Mm. But I think we need to look a little closer into some of these stories. And there are connections, Mike, between biological and chemical labs in the U.S., in Britain, and some of these instances. Historically, this is a fact.
And unfortunately, the UK mainstream media just can't get to grips with the fact that any leader in the world can be popular. and actually people might want to vote for them and encourage them in what they're doing. And so Sputnik here pointing out that the UK mainstream media is alleging Russian election fraud, bearing in mind that this is the UK mainstream media, and you know there are questions over whether it's actually legitimate for somebody who has allegedly won an election in the UK to then bribe a secondary party to help build a coalition with £1 billion of taxpayers' money without any parliamentary scrutiny or any parliamentary agreement. Mm. It's a bit tricky to know where the election fraud is actually taking place, Patrick.
So bribing your way into government with the 1.5 billion or 1 billion pounds?
I think it's around 1.2 billion or so is what's promised at the moment.
Public money, yes. So that happened in the UK, right?
Yes.
So there's no problem with that, right?
Apparently not.
In terms of democracy. And yet these accusations are going that the Russian election was fixed. There's all sorts of stories circulating around now. Opposition figures are coming up. And by the way, this is in the Russian press too, which shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. Half the Russian press is totally criticizing Putin and the government all the time. They actually do have an opposition in Russia. Unfortunately, Mike, for the Western press and those people who are pushing these stories, Vladimir Putin's approval rating is somewhere around 80%.
Yeah.
And this is with a 65% voter turnout. In the UK, what's the voter turnout? It's about 35%. And what is the approval rating of this current prime minister?
I don't think the numbers go low enough.
It's not close to Putin's 80%. It's probably more down by...
8.
It's pretty low, south of 20%.
Yeah.
So in terms of public acceptance of their president or their leader, I really don't think that people can level any real credible criticism at Vladimir Putin, despite the fact he's winning by a landslide. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's not popular just because Russia doesn't have an unelected or a government without a mandate in power doesn't mean that they're illegitimate. That seems to be what we're used to in the United States and Britain. So we're projecting our cynicism on other countries.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's look at another country where we've been projecting our cynicism and a lot worse. We've got some footage of somebody driving into Eastern Ghouta.
We want to thank our man on the ground in Eastern Ghouta for supplying us with this footage. Driving into Eastern Ghouta, recently liberated from the Western-backed terrorists. And here he is. This is our man on the ground. You'll be able to see him in a minute. Just turning his GoPro camera over to... And there he is, this Bashar, driving into Eastern Ghouta.
Now, Theresa May doesn't drive herself around like that, does she?
She doesn't drive herself around. And I just can't see Donald Trump driving past the front lines of any battle. And if you have any questions as to why Bashar al-Assad is so popular in Syria, why he's loved by his people, well, take a look at this clip. And this is Bashar al-Assad meeting residents in East Ghouta after they've been liberated from a terrorist occupation.
Yes.
So as you can see, the residents, Mike, there are, as on that frame, are not scared of their president.
Well, and their president is not scared of his people either.
Boris Johnson, Theresa May say he's a butcher, he's an evil dictator, and as you can see, people are more than happy to see their president. Mike, that you would never see that anywhere in the world, and that's an exceptional leader. Unfortunately, I know this is going to hurt people at The Guardian to hear that, but that's why he's got a 70% approval rating.
Human Rights Watch, though, are concerned about the white helmets.
Well, this is interesting. So this was tweeted out by Zaina Kador. So she's saying, Human Rights Watch, Syria Civil Defense, which they've stolen the name. They're talking about the white helmets there. They've stolen the real Syria Civil Defense's name. So the white helmets are asking for safe passage for them and their families to other rebel areas. There's not many left, unfortunately.
No.
Sorry, guys. They fear retaliation, including summary executions, when government takes the area. Well, as we just showed the clips, and there are reams of footage right now of residents coming out of humanitarian corridors, in fact, welcoming Syrian troops in. So whoever's tweeting this, or if Human Rights Watch is really saying this, this is fake news, effectively. But go back to that tweet. You can see James Le Mesurier, not to be confused with Le Mesurier from Dad's Army.
Yes.
Not to be confused. So he's the founder, the British mercenary who founded the British-funded, British-founded, U.S.-funded, EU-funded White Helmets, whose base is not in Syria, it's actually in Turkey. He's saying, Zeina, what's the source, please? What is this? I haven't heard about this. So the founder of the White Helmets hasn't heard about this outrageous claim that Syria is executing White Helmets. So again, it's fake news. Mm. So we see so much of this right now. So the media is in meltdown, Mike. They're desperate. They've lost Aleppo. The terrorists have been kicked out of Aleppo. The Guardian is in tears. The terrorists are now being kicked out of Ghouta. The Guardian and the Times and the BBC and CNN, they don't know what to do. They put out so many babies and gratuitous photos of children. They used Banna and all these different kids to propagate a false narrative, and now it's coming to an end, and they just don't know what to do.
Mm. Okay, a couple of advertisements. AV9 happening on the 4th to the 7th of May, 2018, Howard House Hotel. Still some rooms and tickets available left for that. That's near Milton Keynes. You can find out more at alternativeview.co.uk. You will be speaking at this, Patrick. Do you know what you're speaking about just yet?
Yeah, we'll be speaking about a lot of the things that we talk about on this show. Right. But most importantly, we're going to be talking about the collusion between Silicon Valley, the mainstream media, and government to mute dissenting views and opinions online and to censor people across social media platforms. So we're going to talk about that cartel, that collusion, which is actually illegal in many countries and will be challenged legally by a number of people. There are already a number of cases in the works, but it's something that we all need to be concerned about because effectively they want to shut off information in the digital sphere and the information revolution. And we hope people will take an interest in this enough to want to stop it.
At the Albert Hall in Nottingham on the 12th of May, the UK column's Dying for Good Health. This is a conference about the NHS. Quite a number of doctors have signed up to speak at this event. We'll be releasing the speakers list hopefully today or tomorrow. I do recommend that people get along to this if you're in the slightest bit interested in making sure that the NHS is protected in some degree. Tickets available already from the UK column website. You can get them by clicking on that link on the front page. Okay, Patrick, global trade is an issue. Particularly since apparently the Trump regime, are we allowed to call it that, has been suggesting that tariffs need to be applied, particularly to steel and aluminium. This is Politico, and the headline here is Europe fears Trump is out to kill the World Trade Organization. And it says Brussels sees tariffs against steel and aluminium as just the first wave of a broad assault on the architecture of global trade. The EU's bigger fear is that Trump's ultimate goal is to kill off the World Trade Organization and rip up the current rulebook that underpins global trade networks. European trade officials argue that their American counterparts are sick of WTO judgments that they think are too lenient towards China and are now ready to take a sledgehammer to the whole system. America is well advanced in its plans to throttle the WTO's appellate court, where countries resolve disputes over everything from subsidies to anti-dumping tariffs. Washington's strategy is to block the appointment of judges, which would bring the system to a halt next year. Both Brussels and the WTO are moving into crisis mode over this attack on the appellate court. The EU reckons that America's might is right approach will sap confidence in global trade and undermine economic growth. And this has then been followed up by an open letter from 45 US trade associations, which apparently represent retail, technology, agriculture, other consumer product industries. And they have urged the Trump administration not to move forward with its tariff plan for Chinese imports, saying that it's going to hurt U.S. consumers and companies. The imposition of sweeping tariffs, they say, would trigger a chain reaction of negative consequences for the U.S. economy, provoking retaliation, stifling U.S. agriculture, goods and services exports, and raising costs for businesses and consumers. We urge the administration to take measured, commercially meaningful actions consistent with international obligations that benefit U.S. exporters, importers and investors, rather than penalize the American consumer and jeopardize recent gains in American competitiveness. Now, I think the important thing to note here is that this seems to be an attack on dispute resolution, Patrick. And dispute resolution, of course, was the issue at the core of the campaigns against these massive free trade deals like TTIP, TPP, CETA, and the rest. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's fascinated me about the whole Brexit negotiation, just before we came on air, by the way, it was announced that the agreement for the transition period for Brexit has been met. And we had the concession last week from the European Commission that Britain was entitled to negotiate free trade agreements with third countries outside the EU without the EU's permission, which up until that point had not been the case. Mm-hmm. And we also have this issue underneath the veneer of Brexit, of whether Britain is going to be held to account by the European Court of Justice or not. And discussions from or comments from Theresa May and David Davis and others about needing some kind of new dispute resolution mechanism as we build a new trade agreement with the European Union and with these other trade, these other third countries. So I'm fascinated that this is the issue that the United States seems to be pursuing with this policy. Because, of course, hashtag Global Britain is all about building this new trade infrastructure. And if we go back to the Best of Both Worlds document, Patrick, if you remember, global trade and TTIP was absolutely the heart of that white paper and that legally binding agreement. And so what we seem to be having here is the City of London Wall Street axis attempting to build in a new free trade infrastructure, which includes some kind of new dispute resolution mechanism. Perhaps the EU not quite so happy with that just at this moment in time, but it does seem all a bit coincidental that all this stuff is happening at the same moment.
So do you think, Mike, that this crisis that's brewing here with Donald Trump in the tariff wars with China, and now this is begging for a solution in the dispute resolution part of the international trade agreements, and are you saying that this is opening the door for a reintroduction or TTIP or TPP by fiat, in a sense?
That's exactly what I'm saying. I'm saying if you look at the model that they have used with regard to military unification, where they have lots of bilateral agreements, which they then all bring together into one Uber agreement, if we look at what happened with TTIP and TPP, there was so much public reaction to that. They could not proceed with those policies as they were architected at that point. So they're attempting to do this with Britain at the centre, creating bilateral trade agreements. They're going to bring these together in the not-too-distant future into an Uber trade agreement. It's all happening under the guise of Brexit. And why is it happening? Because they are panicking about what China and what Russia and the BRICS countries are doing. They're panicking about the Belt and Road, and they need to build, they need to build this huge infrastructure with this new dispute resolution mechanism at the center in order to counter what China's doing.
And so Brexit was a catalyst, Mike.
Yes.
Brexit was a catalyst for a new order.
Yes.
To be designed. We're talking about an Atlanticist order, or Atlanticist dominated order, to counter the acceleration of the Eurasian project and the Belt and Road project.
That's
so. I mean, in terms of doing trade war, we'll move on in a second. But you know, if you're going to go to war with China economically, the United States can't really go toe to toe with China because, for one, there'll be displacement. In other words, if the U.S. Is not buying Chinese goods, those goods will make their way into other markets, Mike. Mm. The other thing is China could very easily start dumping treasury bills on the global market, and then you'll see the currency devaluing in the United States and the purchasing power of the dollar dropping like an anvil off of the Empire State Building. So that's probably not going to happen either. So I think your explanation, Mike, in terms of a fake crisis to engineer a new international order with Britain and the U.S. at the center of that, I think that seems more and more like a likely explanation.
Okay, Patrick, we're absolutely out of time, so we're just going to leave on this one.
Well, this is a big scoop, everybody out there. Get ready for it. We have a suspect in the Salisbury case, thanks to a very reputable publication here. British police have found a passport at the scene of the crime in Salisbury, and if you take a closer look, you'll see that's Vladimir Putin. Has left his passport at the scene.
As happens all the time, 9/11, 7, so passports just get left around all the time, Patrick.
It's a done deal. Case closed. Elementary, my dear Watson.
Yes.
As they say. Incredible,
okay,
isn't it?
Well, we're going to leave it on that note. And thank you very much for joining me today, Patrick. Thank you to Dmitry Orlov for joining us as well. We will be back at the same time tomorrow, and we hope to see you then. Bye-bye.